Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. Then he leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skins. The busboy comes and takes it with a cough, contaminates it, and puts it in a can with coffee grinds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday and carts it all away. And a thousand trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage. Garbage, 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 garbage. We're filling up the seas with garbage. What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Mr. Thompson starts his Cadillac and winds it down the freeway track, leaving friends and neighbors in a hydrocarbon haze. He's joined by lots of smaller cars, all sending gases to the stars. There they form a seething cloud that hangs for 30 days. And the sun licks down into it with an ultraviolet tongue, till it turns to smog and settles down and ends up in our lungs. Oh, garbage. Garbage, garbage, garbage. We're filling up the sky with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to breathe but garbage? Getting home and taking off his shoes, he settles down with the evening news while the kids do homework with the TV in one ear. Garbage. While Superman for the thousandth time sells talking dolls and conquers crime, dutifully they learn the date of birth of Paul Revere. In the paper there's a piece about the mayor's middle name, and he gets it read in time to watch the all-star bingo game. Oh, garbage. Garbage, 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 garbage. We're filling up our minds with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to read, and there's nothing left to need, and there's nothing left to watch, and there's nothing left to touch, and there's nothing left to walk upon, and nothing left to talk upon, nothing left to see, and there's nothing left to be but garbage? In Mr. Thompson's factory, they're making plastic Christmas trees complete with silver tinsel and a geodesic stand. The plastic's mixed in giant vats from some conglomeration that's been piped from deep within the earth or strip-mined from the land. And if you question anything, they say, why don't you see? It's absolutely needed for the economy. Oh, garbage. Garbage, 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 garbage. Their stocks and all their bonds, all garbage. What will they do when their system goes to smash? There's no value to their cash. There's no money to be made, but there's a world to be repaid. Their kids will read in history books about financiers and other crooks and feudalism and slavery and nukes and all their knavery. To history's dustbin they're consigned, along with many other kinds of garbage. Garbage, 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 garbage.
Well, there's a nice way to start a radio show for you. It's Paul Kottheimer live on Live and Local here in our studio on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And a song of Pete Seeger's in advance of a special airing, or rather showing, I should say, of a film called Pete Seeger, The Power of Song. It came from the PBS American Masters series. And it's going to be shown tomorrow evening at 6:30 at the Urbana Free Library, a free program, during which Paul Kottheimer will do a live performance himself, including several songs made famous by Pete Seeger. Paul, an Urbana-based singer-songwriter, he's also the owner and operator of the Handmade Records label, and he's my guest this portion of the program. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
You know, yours is a name I've heard around town for many years, and as I said in an email and, or else a or a Facebook message or however it was that I contacted you, I'm not sure how it is we've avoided having you on the show so far, but I'm glad you were able to make it.
Thanks.
How did you get involved in this particular program? Are you a fan of Seeger's? I mean, I assume that you are, or just kindred spirit, or what?
Well, I think I'm a student of Pete Seeger.
A student?
Sure, why not? I mean, Pete Seeger's main role in the world of folk music was as a teacher, I think. I mean, he was a walking encyclopedia of folk music, and he was a teacher of audiences. He would lead them in song. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm one of, I assume, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of students of Pete Seeger. And so I've known about I've known about his work for, I can't remember when I didn't. I mean, if you say, name a folk singer, you know, a lot of people will just say, Pete Seeger. He's that iconic. And definitely he's an inspiration in terms of how to send political messages using songs. So that's definitely something I study, because you don't want to hit people over the head with it, and you don't want to just extrude fluff, right? You want to say something that has weight and that makes a difference in the world, and studying Pete Seeger can help you do that. So that's what I do.
So when you say there's, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions, probably students of Pete Seeger, the difference, of course, between most of them and you is that they may have learned something, but they don't try to either emulate or do something similar to what he was doing, at least in many of his songs. I mean, he also wrote and performed songs for kids that had no political message of any kind and other sorts of folk music. Although, is it or not safe to say that most folk music has a message of some kind?
Sometimes the message is just, we are here, we are here, we live a life, right? I had a duck, and the duck pleased me, I fed my duck on a greenberry tree. There's a message there. It's that, you know, I have kids and I need to sing to them.
Yeah, well, there is that.
Real basic message.
Or I suppose the ballad that tells a story and and doesn't have anything other than entertainment value behind it. But in your own time as a singer-songwriter, a lot of what you do does have take that side of Pete Seeger's work that is political. I don't know that that's exclusively what you do, but it's a pretty important part.
Maybe I've lately tried not to write songs that you could peg as overtly political.
You say tried to write songs.
Sure. and I've succeeded. How's that?
Okay. Well, I mean, I thought the corollary could be that, you know, I've tried and I just can't keep the message out of the song.
You know, I have a song that's exactly that, that I wrote myself, called My Message. And this very piece of conversation might be a good segue to that song. Want to hear it?
Go right ahead.
Well, it wasn't what I was planning to play next, but since you mention it.
Well, this is live radio,
yeah.
And things get changed according to the conversation.
Sure. Well, anyway, this is a song I wrote about that exact issue. Like, well, I have lots of friends who play music, bars and clubs, and people just jump and dance and enjoy. And I said to myself, why can't I write a nice and happy, go-lucky, you know, no strings attached kind of number? And I tried, and I accidentally wrote this. It's called My Message. And it'll be the title track of my upcoming album. Shameless plug. Thank you. I carved my message into a bar of ivory soap and tossed it in the ocean. In retrospect, this was probably not the best idea, 'cause now I could use a bath and there's not a bar of soap around. I mixed my message into an eggplant tart and put it in the oven. What happened next is about what you'd expect, 'cause when it was done, it smelled so delicious that we ate it all and never gave a second thought to anything that might be hidden inside. So I hired a pilot to write my message in the sky. Her cursive was impeccable, but her altitude was way too high. So by the time it drifted into view, my message was competing with a rainbow. I mean, who wants to be competing with a rainbow? Tossed it in the ocean. On second thought, this was probably the best idea of them all. 'Cause think about the volume of the ocean and think of my message floating there with all the jellyfish and orcas and rubber ducks and running shoes that fall off of container ships. And think about the dolphins translating my message into dolphinese, into dolphinese, into dolphinese.
I do see what you mean. I thought you did it nicely, actually. Yeah, I mean, for a equivocal song, that's pretty good. Dolphinese.
Yes. The language of dolphins is dolphinese.
Yeah, you've never conversed with one.
Well, I hear they whistle.
They do whistle. Is that why that was in there?
I wrote the second verse first, and then I thought, well, after the rainbow part, it needs a little solo. And I thought, well, better solo than just a little whistle. And it just felt right. And then I wrote the third verse, and it ended with dolphinese. And then I said, well, let's repeat the whistle. And then I thought, hey, wait, dolphinese, whistles. I'm a genius.
One of those moments. Paul Kottheimer.
Kottheimer? Yes.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I could have sworn that I've heard your name, but maybe everybody mispronounces it.
Could be.
Paul Kottheimer, here on Live and Local, live in our studio. He's going to be performing a couple of times this week, tomorrow evening, during an evening in which the Pete Seeger film called Pete Seeger, The Power of Song, is going to be shown at the Urbana Free Library. That program starts at 6:30. And then on Saturday night, a show that starts at 9 o'clock with three different acts. It's in Mike and Molly's in downtown Champaign. Ghostwriter And the featured band is the Reckless Stiffs, and Paul will be performing as well. And you said you think you're probably opening that one.
I'm first on the bill. I got confirmation of that, yeah.
You did. Okay, so that'll be mm-hmm. right at 9 o'clock. And I did see the doors open at 8 o'clock on, mm-hmm. on Saturday. Have you seen this film, Pete Seeger, The Power of Song?
No, I haven't.
So you'll be watching it for the first time along with many people who attend, I imagine.
Could be, yeah. Yeah, I think it's probably a PBS Masters thing, so you could
it is, yeah.
watch it online probably really easily.
Yeah, I have not seen it, mm-hmm. And so I might be among those in the audience. What's going to be your role in that? I mean, it says on the publicity material. And by the way, I should say that this is a presentation of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival with some assistance from Illinois Public Media, the WYNL stations.
Mm-hmm. My role, I'm going to come on after the movie and sing six songs and do my best in Pete Seeger style to make people sing along with me. We'll see how that works out.
Do you typically do sing-alongs at all in your own shows?
It's kind of like two separate things. If I'm going to be taking part in a sing-along, it's going to be like a private house thing at friends or just a party. I'll show up with my guitar and we'll pull out Rise Up Singing and do that. I've done that quite a lot, but I don't really think of that as a gig. I think of that as just going to a party with some friends. Although at the IMC, for example, that's a good venue for that sort of thing. And I did do one of those on the 3rd of May, which would have been Pete Seeger's 95th birthday. It's been sort of a Pete Seeger month this month.
Which was also sponsored by the Folk and Roots Festival, I believe.
It was. This is the third Pete Seeger event. The one tomorrow will be the third. There was one at Mike and Molly's also on Sunday.
I think I somehow missed a notice about that one. Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
chaos of live music.
Yeah, we can't know about everything. Mm-hmm. And the what did you call it? The Rise Up Singing?
Rise Up Singing, sure.
Is that a collection of songs?
Yeah, Pete Seeger was one of the original editors of the Rise Up Singing songbooks, if I'm not mistaken. At least he writes a foreword in the edition that I see most often. It's been circulating since the late 70s or early 80s, the Rise Up Singing book, and it's got hundreds of songs in it, mostly lyrics with very bare notations of what chords go where, no melody notation at all. And, of course, attributions with who wrote what. You know, before you could look up the lyrics to anything you could imagine on the internet, this was a useful tool for sing-alongs. And now the sing-alongs I go to, we go back and forth. Sometimes we'll pull something out of the book, especially if people have been singing out of Rise Up Singing at parties and stuff like that. They'll just go, oh, my favorite song's on page 103. And everyone will just turn to the page and we'll launch into whatever it happens to be. And then there's the internet, which just gives you the lyrics to just anything you want.
I've made good use of that at times for this program, mm-hmm. Certainly. So Rise Up Singing, the implication, at least an inference I take from the title, is that of the people rising up so that many of the songs may likely be message songs?
I don't know if that's true. One of these mornings we're going to rise up singing is a lyric from the second verse of Summertime and the Living is Easy. Does it ring a bell? One of these mornings we're going to rise up singing.
Yeah, that's the part of the song where usually I have stopped paying attention to the words because that's what I do when I'm listening to songs.
Well,
I'm one of those people that just doesn't absorb words very well.
Yeah, I'm definitely on the other camp there.
I would be absolutely, absolutely certain of that. There are those who do, and my sister is one who does. You know, mm-hmm. When we were kids, she used to be able to recite.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, she used to be able to recite every lyric to Jesus Christ Superstar, for example.
Yeah.
And I only ever learned one of those songs, and it was the shortest one in the whole show.
Right, sure.
Neither here nor there.
So is the collection Rise Up Singing a political collection? I don't think necessarily. It definitely has a chapter called Songs of Action or Songs of Protest or something like that, and they're in that section are collected songs that got famous because of the Civil Rights Movement, for example, or the Anti-Vietnam War movement. That's about the time period that the songbook focused on. So it didn't really get any major new additions since about 83. So it's kind of frozen in time in that way. But there are also just campfire goodies and lullabies and old-timey numbers and Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder and, you know, kind of a little bit of everything in this book. I'm surprised you don't know it.
Well, not being a singer or a guitarist or a songwriter and not frequenting sing-alongs, those are four strikes against me, I'd say. But, you know, I think it is, you know, I've read about Pete Seeger at various times over the years, little bits of pieces. But I can't say I'm terribly knowledgeable about him or his life or, you know, about folk music in general. I've absorbed various songs, appreciated various artists over the years. And but like so many of the types of music we have on this radio show, I'm sort of – I skirt the surface. So I try to get people like you to talk a little bit more about him. What's your sense as a songwriter who does often write political folk music of what the modern issues are that would be sort of parallel to the issues that Pete Seeger wrote about?
Well, unfortunately, the problems that Pete and his generation of songwriters wrote about still persist. There's war, big time.
There is war.
There's pollution, big time. There is senseless violence and senseless bigotry in the world to this day, and a songwriter has to be clever to address those things in a way that isn't just preaching to the choir. That was one of the main problems I faced when political action songs were my big focus probably about 10 or 12 years ago, was that I felt like I was sending out a message and everyone said, I agree. But that doesn't really change anybody's minds because they all agreed already before you even picked up your guitar. You know, that's a little bit pessimistic, and that's the weird thing about Pete Seeger, is no matter how much he went through, he was blacklisted by McCarthyism. He couldn't perform on TV or radio for the big chunk of the middle of his career. When he came to the University of Illinois in the late 50s, he couldn't play on campus. He had to play at the YMCA instead. In spite of all of this, he was relentlessly optimistic, that Pete Seeger. Everywhere I look, I say, when did Pete Seeger ever have a sour or bitter word to say about the process? And the answer is never. He just kept being positive. And that's a big challenge. I can't remember what the question was, and I sort of rambled there.
I don't either, because you actually sort of captivated me with, the notion of what are the issues, the parallel issues today to the ones that he faced. And I get, you know, one of the things I maybe we should let you do another song.
Cool.
But I'll hold my question until I hear what it is you're going to do next.
Okay.
Is it one of yours or one of his?
I'd like to do a song that was written by Malvina Reynolds. I don't know too much about Malvina Reynolds, and I really ought to do some research on that. Pete Seeger made this song famous in the early 60s, and this one is one that has a very childlike presentation, but underneath it is no such thing. Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, little boxes, little boxes, all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, where they were put in boxes and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and lawyers and
business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same, and they all play on the golf course and drink their martinis dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, where they are put in boxes, and they come out all the same. And the boys go into business, and marry and raise a family in boxes made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. There's a green one, and a pink one, and a blue one, and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
Paul Kottheimer in a song by Malvina Reynolds, as he said, made famous by Pete Seeger, Little Boxes, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Live in our studio, our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past. Through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois, more information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. In a way, Paul, your song, that particular song, answered at least in one way the question I was thinking of before you sang it, which is how, when one as a songwriter is facing so many of these issues that have hung on for so long, you avoid sounding angry. And there's one way, I guess, to give the song a childlike character.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it involves straight-up irony. You just say the opposite of what you really mean and put a twist on the melody or on the performance that helps helps the audience get it, that you clearly intend the opposite of what your lyrics are saying. Sometimes you can use the reductio ad absurdum, where you take something that's really happening in the world today and imagine a future in which it's exaggerated beyond all reasonable proportion, and what would that be like? And so it becomes sort of a fun science fiction number. The other method might be to – it's sort of like I think of the metaphor of the unraveling sweater. If you just find the right thread, that you pull it and the whole thing just comes apart and in a pile of yarn on the floor. If you're very, very astute as an artist of any kind, whether it's words or music or paint on canvas, you can find that point in culture and society. Where if you just poke it, it is all revealed.
It'll fall apart.
Right.
So that one is the one that sort of relies on logic.
Maybe.
To an extent, which seems to be probably the riskiest of all of those, because when you're talking about things political, although whatever side you may be on, probably you think your point of view is logical. But when you put it up against the other side, which also thinks the point of view is logical, then you have a clash.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know the singer-songwriter Roy Zimmerman, by any chance?
I think I do. Sure. Isn't he? He performs as if he's a CIA member, right? He's like a singing CIA member. Is his shtick?
Well,
or am I thinking of somebody else?
Well, you might be thinking about the same person. I don't know if he's characterized by that way. He's been on the show a couple of times, but he tends to dress very conservatively, a white shirt, black pants, and I can't remember if he wears a tie or not. But he definitely often anyway takes the – I mean his songs are usually quite overtly political.
Mm-hmm.
From a liberal point of view, and but he definitely takes the one approach a lot of the time in which it's all irony.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where he's had conservatives write to him and congratulate him mm-hmm. on his song, which was the irony was really, in other words, they didn't get it at all.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that they were agreeing with whatever mm-hmm. their point of view was.
Yes, Roy Zimmerman's a great example of someone who employs irony full on to the hilt. Yes, I haven't seen him play in probably, 5 or 10 years. But I partied with him once.
Oh, yeah?
Sort of.
A lot of fun.
There was at least 2 coffees involved.
Well, he's a funny guy, and yeah. The songs can be very funny and a creative writer. There must be times, though, when songs you've written or songs Pete Seeger or other, let's say, political message singers will write a song where you give vent to how you really feel about it. Particularly knowing that you're going to probably be performing to those of like mind.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. But the next song I'm going to do is exactly the opposite of that. It has absolutely nothing to do with that.
The garbage song was sort of
the garbage.
Like that.
Oh, yeah. Garbage song.
The one you opened with.
Yeah. I really get a kick out of that number. I didn't know anything about it until maybe a couple months ago, and I looked it up, and surely enough, there was plenty of reference to it online and a video that I could grab to and watched it all the way through, and I thought it was it definitely says the 70s version of environmentalism in a great crystallized way.
So this was you found a video of Seeger doing it himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And did he sort of give vent to his to the indignation in the course of the song?
Actually,
and the tone of it?
Yeah, the Pete Seeger performance features a prompt to the crowd where he tells the crowd to mutter garbage, 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 garbage throughout.
So you were the crowd when you're doing
yes,
that.
Yes, I had to play both roles there in this setting. So I think that it's not total indignation. I think that's evidence that there's some humor there. I mean, if you've got an entire hall, maybe even the Royal Albert Hall, full of people muttering garbage, 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 then it there's a little bit of the ridiculous there.
Right,
in a good way.
Yeah. Paul Kottheimer is my guest this on Live and Local today. He's going to be performing immediately following a showing of the PBS American Masters film, Pete Seeger, The Power of Song, at the Urbana Free Library tomorrow evening at 6:30. It's a presentation of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival with some support, I understand, from this radio station and a television station. Of course, we are the PBS TV station and the NPR affiliate radio station. And Paul will be the opening act as a three-part show on Saturday night at Mike and Molly's downtown Champaign, starting at 9 o'clock, also with Ghostwriter and then the Reckless Stiffs. And again, Paul live on Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and I appreciate your coming in. So what's that next song that takes the opposite approach?
31 true facts about my girlfriend. 31 true facts about my girlfriend. 31 true facts about her. She used to work at Baskin Robbins on Green Street. She's a food geek. Her favorite Muppet is Bert. She knows what to do with a rutabaga. She gives herself pedicures. She's a total freaking Virgo. She drives a purple car. She owns 13 pairs of boots. She hasn't shaved her armpits since 1999. She's pretty good at Space Invaders. She drinks PBR at wine tastings. She plays puzzle bobble all night long. Her favorite tree is a ginkgo. She has inherited 3 geckos. She makes the most badass in coffee in the Northern Hemisphere. 31 true facts about my girlfriend. 31 true facts about my girlfriend. 31 true facts about her. She likes clean sheets and she cannot lie. Give her cake, but she'd rather have pie. If she were an animal, she'd be an owl. She won the Peoria Spelling Bee in the eighth grade. She falls asleep while watching Cosmos. Her mom is the author of an award-winning book of children's poems. She is cussing at her cell phone. She is looking for her favorite pair of scissors. She is swimming through the stratosphere. She is digging my bloody Valentine. She would rather have a pear than an apple. She is updating her Facebook photo again. She makes collages on the walls. She bakes quilts. She sews pies. She knits soup. She reads my mind when she is so inclined. 31 true facts about my girlfriend. 31 true facts about my girlfriend. 31 true facts about her. All right, Kevin, what's the message there?
You have a girlfriend and she's kind of interesting.
Excellent.
Paradoxical somehow or another. So yeah. Are these actually about a true person?
Mm-hmm. They sure are.
She's my wife now.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. So how long ago did you write the song?
The song was written probably about 5 years ago. And
That was at what stage in your courtship?
We had been living together with her kids for 6 years already. And then we got hitched for real the next year after that.
So you knew her pretty well.
Yeah, pretty well.
At that point. How did she like the song?
I think she gets a kick out of it. I'm pretty sure. As you can imagine, it's a little bit embarrassing to have it sung and you know, have to sit in the audience and sort of, if people know who it's about, then it will feel like the spotlight's on you. So sometimes I save it for when she's not going to be around, and other times I pull it out and sing it when I know that almost everybody in the room knows that it's about her, and that's fun too.
I suppose if you're in a setting where they don't know,
mm-hmm.
you could always just pretend that it's about a previous girlfriend.
Sure, yeah. Sure, but I still
if
can't.
Necessary.
I still can't actually look at Jesse while I'm singing the song because I'll just crack up. I'll just start laughing.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Uh-huh.
Paul Kottheimer here on Live and Local. Our programs are made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign. For over 25 years, 10,000 Villages has provided income to artisans in more than 30 developing countries by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America. I, as part of my extremely minimal introduction to you at the start of the show, I said that you have your own record label
mm-hmm.
Called Handmade Records, and mm-hmm. it's simply handmaderecords.com.
Yeah.
Did you come up with this simply so someone would publish your songs, or did you have in mind publishing, producing the songs of many people, or music of many people?
Mostly it's a DIY affair. The Handmade Record label and handmaderecords.com are 99.9% devoted to my own work, mostly because it wouldn't do anybody else very much good to be affiliated with the Handmade Record label. It's not particularly profitable.
Yeah, there can be that. Well, mm-hmm. maybe. Well, never mind.
Did you have a business strategy for me, Kevin?
Yeah. Well, I'm not one to talk with any knowledge.
It's okay.
About business, because I can't report any success, so I might be right up there, mm-hmm. right up there with you. Well, let's talk about you a little.
All right, sure.
Just because you have been active in different kinds of things that I'm familiar with in the community, mm-hmm. The Red Herring Performers Coffee House, Red Herring Coffee House on the University of Illinois campus, for mm-hmm. example, it's a place that you know I used to eat a lot. On the University of Illinois campus. in relatively recent years involved with the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Mm-hmm. You mentioned it earlier as the IMC, which both a venue and an institution of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start getting into songwriting at all, and then particularly into message songwriting?
Huh.
Or had they ever been separate, really?
Okay. I've been a songwriter since I was in high school. I've been a listenable songwriter for at least the past 5 to 10, for a while now, I hope. I've been putting out my own work on cassettes and CDs for over 20 years now. I'm celebrating my 20th anniversary doing it here in Champaign-Urbana this year. I came here in 93, and I was involved in the Red Herring. Pretty much as soon as I got here, I found that place. And, I was in college and was living at home in the suburbs, and there really wasn't a music scene for me before I came here. I was looking for one in Chicago before I moved here in 93. But when I got here, this pair of towns, Champaign-Urbana, is just right. It's just the right size petri dish for a bunch of musicians. And that includes every genre, jazz and folk and rock and classical musicians. We're thick as thieves around here, just so many of us. So it was really wonderful to find collaborators and find fellow travelers pretty much as soon as I got moved in 20 years ago. And so the answer to the when is for quite a long time now.
You said was and were, mm-hmm. that these communities were sort of a petri dish for those things. Do you think that that is still the case, or have things changed over time?
It's definitely true now also. Obviously, the thing that I've witnessed is that the internet is a double-edged sword for musicians. On the one hand, the minute you have a recording of something, you can share it with an audience just by pressing a few buttons. On the other hand, it seems like attracting an audience to an event that's happening in real life is getting harder and harder. On the other hand, you can use the internet as a tool to tell people when and where. And then you're frequently unpleasantly surprised by the small numbers that you get in terms of turnout. So yes, things have changed. And Champaign-Urbana, I think, remains a really awesome place for live music. And it seems like it's been steady throughout the whole time I've been here. I mean, I was kind of out of the game for a while when my son was little. But now I feel like I meet a whole bunch of people who are between the ages of like 23 and 33. And wow, they're just making lots of music. It's lots and lots of music.
Is that still true for folk music?
Oh, yeah. The Monday Night Hootenanny at the Rose Bowl in Urbana is really just phenomenal. It crosses generations. There are gray-haired people and there are young people. It crosses genres. There are people who play country and western. There are people who play folkier folk music. There are people who play rock music with acoustic instruments. But the evening is almost totally acoustic music. You don't see electric guitars there. Really interesting. And it has a home at the Rose Bowl, of all places.
Home of country music.
Right, the home
of
country music.
It says on the door.
It does say that on the door. And so it's funny that it's funny to me that that's the place that it would happen here in Urbana. It's alive and well, Kevin. Totally it is.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I know I've occasionally talked to I'm thinking of a conversation with one particular jazz musician, mm-hmm. where he's felt that the audience for jazz has perhaps been dwindling. It can get more difficult to – he's found it to have gotten more difficult to sometimes find an audience. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you have a place like the Iron Post in Urbana, which has jazz almost constantly.
Yeah.
And you assume there's a reason for that. I've also talked to various pop and rock musicians who have witnessed the disappearance of some of the clubs that used to be on Green Street in Campus Town and some of the others, and where there were many places to play live music and to go hear live music, and those seem to have dwindled. Some of that seems to have happened before you and I got here, because I came to town 2 years before you did, in 91 for myself. And so I wonder if some of those changes happened earlier than our time.
Uh-huh.
And I guess neither of us can say.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of records around. Like, they're at the Sousa Archive. They've got all of those tapes and photographs of the Champaign-Urbana local music scene from the early 80s. I guess throughout the 80s, I should say. They've had exhibitions recently and panel discussions that featured that collection that just landed at the Sousa Archives. So, yeah, there's ways to find out about it, and those things get put online. And you're right. I hear all those criticisms and disappointments from jazz musicians and rock musicians, but I guess I have to point out that if you play folk music, you don't expect to make a living at it. But if you play jazz or rock, well, if you play jazz, you want to make a living. You want to put bread and butter on the table and get a paycheck. If you play rock, you want to be a superstar, right? So you're going to be disappointed in both of those cases by the current state of affairs. But if you just accept that it's never going to make any money, then you're good.
Right. Well, that's the way to look at it. Lower expectations,
right.
And if you get any success whatsoever, then you're ecstatic.
Right.
It's Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. My guest is Paul Kottheimer. Mm-hmm. He's going to be performing twice this week, Wednesday at 6:30, or I should say later that evening for a program that starts at 6:30 with the showing of the film from PBS American Masters, Pete Seeger, The Power of Song. He'll do some songs, as he puts it, made famous by Seeger, which may or may not have been written by him. And then Saturday night at 9 o'clock, he's performing at Mike and Molly's in downtown Champaign, a show that continues with Ghostwriter and The Reckless Stiff. Do you know anything about those groups? What type of music? I don't.
I don't either. I wish I did, and I intend to find out.
Well, yeah, if you and others go there at 9 and stick around, everybody will find out. As you said, there's the internet. You can probably find out that way.
Mm-hmm,
well,
sure
we
enough.
Should let you sing something else.
Okay. Here's a song that was made famous by Pete Seeger. Oh, and also written by him. But it was made famous particularly because it was censored. It was not allowed onto the Smothers Brothers TV program in 1967. Mm. But it went back and forth between CBS, which produced the Smothers Brothers, and the Smothers Brothers themselves, who advocated pretty loudly on Pete's behalf. And eventually in early 1968... it was re-taped or filmed or whatever the technology was at the time, re-recorded and then broadcast in early 68. It's called Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. It was back in 1942, I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, and that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, but the big fool said to push on. The sergeant said, "Sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base?" "Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but Pete, keep on slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground." We were waist deep in the big muddy, and the big fool said to push on.
Push on!
The sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination, men, follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy, and the big fool said to push on. All at once, the moon clouded over, and we heard a gurgle and cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn round, man, I'm in charge here for now on. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy about a half mile from where we'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big fool said to push on. Well, I'm not gonna point any moral, I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the papers, that old feeling comes on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, and the big fool says a push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, and the big fool says a push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, and the big fool says a push on. We're waist deep, wait, neck deep. Soon even a tall man will be over his head. We're waist deep in the big muddy, and the big fool says a push on.
Pete Seeger channeled by Paul Kottheimer here on Live and Local. Knee deep in the big muddy.
Waist deep.
Was it
waist deep?
Waist deep. I wrote down knee deep. Yeah, so that's me not quite absorbing the words too well. Can I correctly assume something about the Vietnam War at that point?
Sure enough.
1967, 68, you said.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about that song. I mean, I've looked at the lyrics a lot of times and said, well, how could this not slip past most people? Like, it's a story about when somebody Pete's age was in a platoon in World War II, you know, 15 years earlier. You know, I scratched my head. And but apparently it was crystal clear. You know, people got the parable and they realized that the big fool, the tall man who'd be in over his head, was LBJ. It just telegraphed right on through to the censors and they would not have it. But it got turned around eventually.
Suggests a certain amount of sensitivity, perhaps.
Oh, definitely so.
But that's the thing about political songs, message mm-hmm. songs, is that you assume that people are sensitive to whatever the topics are, mm-hmm. or else they wouldn't understand what you're talking about.
I guess so.
Do you when you're writing?
When
you write songs like that, I should say, or have written.
It's really hard because most of the time, if I'm going to write a message song, let's say, I'll take whatever comes. You know, I mean, I'd rather have something than nothing.
Meaning whatever comes into your
head.
Yeah,
whatever comes into my head. Yeah, I mean, I'll take any idea I can get, and then just sort of let the process of preference weed out the duds from the successes, right? Because if I play a song every time I play out, you know, for a bunch of years in a row, then it's in. It's like really part of my set. But if I play it for a little while and then I just get bored with it, then it didn't succeed. You know, there's a certain evolutionary process there. So what I'm saying is, how do I do it? Well, it's a multi-step process. First, I take whatever I can get. Then I work it for a little while and see if it sticks.
And that could be sticking with you. And I assume that
uh-huh.
it,
yeah,
some
it's
got to
stick with me,
or else sticking with the audience. I mean, if you sing it, if you play it out,
mm-hmm.
Do it a bunch of times, and mm-hmm. you get no response.
Good point. I see what you mean. Yeah, that's definitely a factor, is that if then an audience can be a good gauge as to whether or not a song is a success, because you want people to hoot and holler after you're done, and you can hear the difference when they don't.
You know, I was thinking about something earlier when we were talking about protest songs, political songs, message songs, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with any conservative political folk singers? Or has it always been the nature of protest folk singing to be on the left? I don't know the answer to that question. It just occurred to me earlier.
Well, I guess the thing I can think of, the thing that originally that comes to mind is patriotic mainstream country western. People who talk about proud to be an American, where at least thank God I'm free. Do you know that song?
Probably.
Uh-huh. I think that's just one example. So it's not – it's funny because it may be that if you – the way you bracket the definition of folk music might exclude rousing patriotic songs that are that kind of flag wavers like that. And I wonder, is that true? Can – just to work on that example, is proud to be an American? Sure, you could do it as a one person. I could – if I – pull up the chords on the internet, I could probably sing that song for you in 10 minutes if we had the time. So it qualifies as a folk song in terms of its one-person delivery, its compactness, and probably ease to learn. And yet, if you were to see it, you know, as in its full presentation as a Nashville hit with a video, probably with some fireworks, some pickup trucks, some bald eagles and the red, white, and blue and all that, that you probably wouldn't think there's a folk song. And it would be because of those patriotic attributes that I sort of listed there.
Much less a protest song.
Right, totally. It'd be the exact opposite of that. Now, there may be, let's see. Oh, yeah, I'm trying to think of sincere music that is protest music. Here's a thought. It could be that there is music that that protests a decaying American lifestyle that's from the Christian rock point of view in that genre. I could see there being a protest song that's like, you know what's wrong with America? It's that we have strayed away from God. I'm sure there are songs that are like that.
And then it probably comes under the religious side of it.
Sure, yeah.
But we'll have to sort of leave that larger question for the next time or for people to ponder.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Kottheimer's been my guest on Live and Local. It's been a treat to have you on the program. I'm glad we finally got you.
Yeah.
Again, he'll perform following the showing of Pete Seeger, The Power of Song, the film from PBS American Masters, tomorrow evening at 6:30 at the Urbana Free Library. And then he will open the evening at 9 o'clock at Mike and Molly's in downtown Champaign Saturday, followed by Ghost Rider and the Reckless Stiffs. Thanks very much for joining us on the program today, Paul.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
You're listening to 90.9 WYLL-FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. We'll go out with Pete Seeger himself here on FM 90.9.
To everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time.